Good to see you guys. And I must say, you are looking really good today. Enhanced. Kind of yellow. You know, the thing I like about these glasses is you can actually take these lenses out, pop them out like this. And if I want you to look even better, I can put in my rose-colored lenses right here. Problem with this is I don't have my regular glasses on, so I can't really see what I'm doing. Can I have a volunteer put these lenses in for me? How about you, Dale?
And you want the rose-colored ones?
Yes, please. It's amazing how that can change perception, isn't it? I wonder, how do we see people? Do we see people the way Jesus does? Because it's funny, the human tendency, the tendency that we all share is to again and again put the wrong set of lenses on. We tend to see people and see what's important based on what's important to us. To see people based on what they can do for us. And I want to suggest that we can even see that the whole Christian ethic, the Christian way of living and seeing the world in a way, we can do this with the wrong set of lenses. Lenses that in the end do not, first of all, mean that we are loving God with all that we have, with our whole beings, and that we are loving those around us. Thank you very much. Even better. I'm going to take it off so I don't scare you guys. Sometimes we can be not loving those around us. Those in our lives in a sacrificial, generous, unselfish, compassionate way. And it's the way of Jesus, and we call that way Shema. Loving God and loving neighbor above all else. Today we're looking at a story where Jesus was confronted by people who had the wrong set of lenses on. And they did believe in the Shema, that's for sure. They recited it daily, twice a day. They knew it inside out. They could recite it backwards and forwards. But there was a problem, because they were not loving God and others more and more. They were not looking for ways to expand God's love. They were not looking for ways to include and love their neighbors. The Shema for them was a reduction of God's love, not an expansion of God's love. And they knew, they sensed, and they feared that Jesus was going to challenge them and tear this belief down. And like any of us, when they feel threatened, we react. So this is where we pick up in Matthew chapter 22, verses 34 to 40. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Love God, love your neighbor. These are the greatest commands. They are the greatest. All the others depend on these. These two are the filter, the lens to see the world. And it seems like a simple, straightforward question and answer. But there was a bit of a backstory here. Jesus had just silenced and awed this group of people known as the Sadducees with his knowledge of Scripture and his power as a teacher. And the Sadducees were a group of Jews who were known for their denial of the resurrection. So they were grilling him about the resurrection and giving him ridiculous questions and scenarios about a widow whose first husband died. And of course, in the Jewish tradition, she had to marry his brother, or got to marry his brother. Depends which. But this happened in this story 7 times. And the question was this: who then is the widow's husband in heaven? It's like one of those brain teaser riddles, right? It's got that flavor to it. And they weren't really seeking knowledge. It wasn't that they were puzzled or required clarification. They wanted to trap him in an answer, to discredit him. And now the Pharisees want to have a go at him and to see what he knows. So the Pharisees asked a question, and that they knew the answer to. It was really a rhetorical question, and they wanted to trap Jesus in a logic problem that he could not get out of. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? What a great question. But really, we know it was devious. We know it was in the interest of them, and it wasn't in the interest of knowing God and loving him more and of loving neighbors more. A rather innocent-sounding phrase, until you dig deeper into this little phrase, the Pharisees got together. The New American Standard rather ominously translate this, they gathered themselves together. And the message, they gathered their forces for an assault. So really, they huddled together deviously. They called a meeting, an emergency meeting, and they set an agenda and made a motion. Let's trap Jesus. So really, the paraphrase of this question is, hey, Jesus, you so-called rabbi, I dare you to say something unorthodox. Because it was really no question at all. They knew the answer to it. They wanted to trap Jesus. So the Pharisees ask, which law is the greatest? Jesus says, love God with everything you have. And then he says, the second is like it. Love your neighbor. It's like he's saying they both are the greatest. The first is just the greatest-est, right? This whole Shema thing is based on a combination of Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18. This is where this all comes from. And we see it reflected again in Luke chapter 10. You might remember this story. It's a very similar situation to what we're reading here today. An expert in the law, the Jewish law, asked Jesus a question. It was a probing question. It was an insincere question. It was a question of entrapment. He asked Jesus what he had to do to inherit eternal life. And remember, this guy's an expert in the law. He knows the answer to this. So Jesus turns it right back at him and asks him, what is written in the law? So the expert in the law, kind of like a combination of a seminary professor and a legalistic moral policeman, he answers, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus replies, you have answered correctly. He approves of this answer. And what we read today echoes that. These two things are the greatest. Love God and love your neighbor. They override all the others. They are the filter. They are the lens. Now, all this week as I was struggling through these verses, thinking about them, and one thing kept coming up again and again. It might seem obvious to you. There is a greatest commandment. I'm intrigued by this question, which is the greatest commandment? I'm intrigued by it for the simple reason that it clearly implies that there is a greatest commandment. The Pharisees asked this question, and Jesus validates the question with an answer. What is the greatest commandment? Not, there is no greatest, they're all equal. No. He replies, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. Are you a bit surprised by this answer? Maybe a little bit? And it's not the words that these are the greatest that challenge, really. It's the implications. What does it mean to us that these are the greatest? See, the Pharisees knew that these were the greatest, but they saw them as limitations to God's love, as limitations to ethic and how we treat and interact with the other, with the outsider. And what Jesus introduced was an ethic. We could call it an ethic of the kingdom. And like a lot of things that Jesus said and did, it turned things upside down. This is what this ethic is about. The ethic of the kingdom is about first and foremost loving God and loving the other. Does what we are doing and how we see the world, how we're seeing the other, increase love for God and multiply love for the other? Or does it diminish it? Because we need to see the world and each other in the right way. And so often we can have the wrong set of lenses on and we see things in the wrong way, in a reductionist way, in a way that limits God's love, in a way that seeks to exclude those who are included in what God is doing, in a way that reduces the vastness and mystery of God's grace. But Jesus said, no, that's not the way of it. You people, you who are using God's laws as a diving board into the waters of reducing God's love, as an entry into all these minute laws and details that must be kept, as a way to make the simplest transgression, like absent-mindedly walking through a field on the Sabbath and plucking a piece of grain, into a violation of the Sabbath, turning that into the function of the greatest law, you've got it completely backwards. So what Jesus does here is he introduces a completely challenging ethic. And it would be wrong to say it's new because it was God's plan all along, but let's just say he rights the ship. Love comes first. When it comes to the Christian ethic, how we live together, how we engage the world and community, our neighbors, the outsiders, not all laws are equal. Love God and love neighbor. Those are the greatest. I remember in Sunday school as a child, my well-meaning and godly and loving Sunday school teacher, an absolutely awesome man, started teaching us about sin, and he made a statement that you might have heard before: all sin is the same in God's eyes. As a young teen, I was very puzzled by this. Really? That doesn't seem right. I could be talking back to my parents, and it's the same thing as, say, torturing someone? How could telling a little white lie to protect a friend be the same as, say, being a sexual predator? How could, and this was an issue in Christian boundary markers back then, how could smoking be the same as murder? Really? Now, maybe the idea that all sin is the same in God's eyes has some merit in the sense that it encourages us to treat sin seriously. And it reminds us about the human condition and our need for God's grace and redemption. But beyond that, it's useless and leads down a road to nowhere. And it's not biblical, it's not practical, it certainly isn't a Christian ethic. If we were to use it to inform how we live with each other and how we deal with sin, it would destroy us. Because ironically, when you apply this to life as an ethic to live by, it lacks any semblance of justice and wisdom. It encourages us not to see the seriousness of some sins based on their destruction of trust and community and Christian witness, because they all seem the same. It's almost as useless as discussing how many angels can dance on the head of a needle. We're still trying to figure that one out. It's not that helpful. We need to move beyond thinking like that. And I believe this passage challenges little bits of Christianese truisms like this. Because it says, you know what? Some things are more important than others. Some things matter more than others. What is the greatest law? Love God. Love your neighbor. See all things through that filter. I think we often get this backwards or forget it a little bit. We see things as the most important, they're maybe the least important. As a matter of fact, the things many of us seem concerned about are usually things that would not be at the top of this hierarchy. Sometimes when we make a decision about how we live that's difficult, we can place the lower Christian ethic against these. I was probably about 10 years old, and we lived in the typical developing 80s neighborhood. There weren't many people on the street, so we kind of knew each other. And one of the neighbors was a Christian man. He went to the same church that we did and lived in a house with a carport and a dirt driveway. It was completely unpaved. It was a mess. He was a businessman, an upright Christian, didn't drink, didn't swear, didn't smoke. Up the street was another neighbor. He was the gravel truck driver. He swore a lot, drank a lot of beer, and he smoked. And he would have been known as the person on the street that needed to be saved. One day he was finishing a job, a big paving job, and he had a whole truckload of asphalt left over. So what this man did was he came to this Christian and offered to pave his driveway for him. Because he saw that his neighbor was in need, saw that it was dirt. And the Christian man was overjoyed. Really? Sure, thank you. That would be great. So the gravel truck driver brought this asphalt in and paved his driveway. Pretty nice. At the end of the job, the Christian man, the upright man, asked, "How much do I owe you? I've got to give you something." And the gravel truck driver, cheerfully in a neighborhood way, said, "Oh, you don't owe me anything. Just get me a case of beer." Boom. The Christian man was horrified. He said, "Oh, no, I can't get you a case of beer. I don't drink beer. Here's $20. True story. And I want to ask you, who was the neighbor in this story? This is the problem. Like the Pharisees in our story today, this man had lost his way. He'd forgotten what the greatest commands were. Love God, love your neighbor. And like the Pharisees, he was more concerned about his personal purity than he was about loving his neighbor. He lacked vision. He had the wrong set of lenses on. God calls us to see the world. And all of our efforts of being Christian, our moralizing, our judging, our behavior, our speech, our finger pointing, how we use our money, how we love the unlovable, how we treat the rejects and outcasts of society through the lens of loving God and loving neighbor above all else. And I think we, like the Pharisees, can lose our way. We begin to think that the more marginal things matter most. We define ourselves by issues that are protectionists of our own desires and insecurities, instead of what we've been told are the greatest issues. And when we lose sight of what's most important, we start making decisions based on what is less important. And the most important decision-making factor is forgotten. Love comes first. There's a Christian theologian that you may have heard of. His name's Bonhoeffer. He lived in Nazi Germany, and it really stimulated his Christian thinking about ethic based on this situation. And he reflected a lot about ethics and how we live and how we treat our neighbor. And here's a scenario based on his thinking that I think will be helpful. Okay, just place yourself here. You're in Nazi Germany. You've decided to hide a family of Jews in your basement because you know for certain that if they are caught, they will be put to death. So the Nazis come to the door. Are you hiding any Jews in your basement? As a Christian, what do you say? You know it's wrong to lie. I hope the answer is easy for you. I hope it doesn't place you in too much of a dilemma. But let's break this down a bit. Think through it. In the ethical universe of unnuanced and pharisaical Christianity, this process is an ethical dilemma. Because in this way of thinking, all ethic is equal. But in reality, the answer from a Christian ethical perspective is simple. Of course you lie. Of course you tell a lie. It would be despicable, personal, and hypocritical moralism to say, I can't tell a lie because I'm a Christian, take them away. Love comes first. Jesus' treatment of the Shema, his reinterpretation of it, instead of reducing the laws to ridiculous subsets of do's and don'ts, expands the law with freedom. It lets us live, encourages us to live with the perspective that Jesus shares. Love comes first. And it shouldn't be a surprise to us, right? So what Romans 8:10 says, love comes first. Love is the fulfilling of the law. This is the Christian ethic. Love comes first. And this is the challenge, to see the world as Jesus does, to put a new set of lenses on. Now's my chance. It's called Captain Morgan. I may have got it wrong. Can I ask the team to come up? As we move forward as a church, as we discern God's calling to us, as we need to put these lenses on, we need to remember that love comes first. We need the lenses that force us, that remind us, that make us see better, that there is a greatest commandment. What is the greatest commandment? Love God with everything you've got. Love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. Everything hinges on these two. Everything. Everything. Personal morality. Outreach. Mission. Who we welcome. How we live. How we talk. Everything hinges on these two. Everything. Love comes first. Amen.